Good evening. Is that better? Okay. I'm trying to remember. I remembered to move the mic. Now the rest of the remembering is up to you guys, because he told me he tried to put last week's lesson on the internet and you guys weren't loud enough when you talked. So you got to talk louder. Okay. Family Bible study. Remember last week my lesson was the ride home. I don't have some neat little story for this one, so you're just going to have to deal with me getting started. But they're connected. Okay, they are definitely connected. The ride home is not very much time, although we found some really good uses for it. Now you've got the rest of the week. Now what? The first question, this time my topic came with a few questions. And I want to address some of those questions. Well, all of them actually we're going to get to. But the first question to me was kind of interesting. Is family Bible study a must? Well, it is. I can't get around that. Logically, I can't understand why somebody would be sitting here this evening and yet answer that question no. It's not necessary. I don't know. I tried and tried. This is, you know, sometimes you sit and you think and you try to think of scenarios why somebody might think a certain way or might feel it. There's lots of people out there that I disagree with, but I can honestly see that perhaps from their point of view, I can understand why they might be what I would consider mistaken. Does that make sense? I can understand where they're coming from and why they might think that way. I can't understand why somebody that would be interested in the Bible or the Lord on any level would think that Bible study would not be important in the family setting. One of the first and most obvious scriptures that I can think of is Ecclesiastes 12 and 1. We could turn there and read it, but can anybody quote that for me? At least part of it that we know a lot.
Remember not the Creator in the days that you until the evil days, and it shall die on the earth from die without the plague of your blessings.
Right. That is such an important verse, I think, to parents. We look at that and we think, well, it's an important verse to us, right? And it is. But I think it's even more important for parents. Remember the Creator in the days of your youth. When we're real young, we kind of have to be helped along with what we've got to learn, because we don't always know. I know most of my kids, not all of them, but most of my kids, if they'd have had a choice in grade school, they'd have never learned any of their math facts. Because that was not fun, it did not seem important, and was not interesting. However, I as the parent knew, and the teachers they had knew, it was desperately important that they learn that. So they learned it. Now they're glad they did. So we as parents have to understand that when a child is young, we have to kind of help them see things that are important for them to know and learn. We also, as we talked about last week, have to figure out how to bring it down to their level. Because as a youth, they're not going to understand the same things that we can understand as an adult, even though it's really easy for us to want to tell them everything we know. Now this, we're talking about the family situation, but I want to branch off. I take tangents once in a while, and here's one of the tangents, so don't lose me on this tangent. This applies, I think, not only to physical age, but I think it applies to spiritual age as well. Those that are mature in the scriptures, know the Bible, understand things, have to be careful that when somebody comes in and is learning new things, they're new. Doesn't matter whether they're 10 or 90. It doesn't make any difference. If they're new, we have to understand that we can't just unload everything we've learned in 30 or 40 or 50 years. They can't absorb it. We've got to start out where they're at and bring them up slowly. I think that's why God calls it maturing. Why He refers to those that are new to the faith, it doesn't matter how old physically they are, spiritually they're babes, right? That's how we refer to them. And we've got to start on their level. We have to do the same thing with our kids at home. We have to understand they got to learn things slowly. And guess what the most important part of learning is to a young person? Does anybody know something I learned when I was in my teaching classes? Repetition is the key to learning. I had about 5 instructors when I was going through my education classes at K-State that they pounded that in over and over and over. And I think they were taking their own words at it. They wanted to repeat the fact that repetition was the key to learning so we'd remember it. And guess what? I remembered it. Repetition is the key to learning. The more I talk to somebody about something, the more they're going to catch on. All right? But there's more to that too. Remember the Creator in the days of your youth, and then He puts a time frame on it. Because what's going to happen? There's going to be difficult days come up. We've got them when they're young, but what happens when they get to be a teenager? That's the easy part of parenting, right? The teen years. If it is, I've got a problem. Because it didn't work that way with my kids. And from talking to other parents, I don't think it worked that way with theirs either. They're getting pressures from outside. They're trying to expand their mind. They're trying to kind of become their own person. And so there's difficulties involved in that from all kinds of angles, including spiritually. Including spiritually. So if I can get them to understand some of the most important basic things when they're really young, it doesn't eliminate all of those problems when they're a teenager, but it makes them easier and it increases the chances that I'm going to be successful in raising a child that's God-fearing and God-loving. For the days are evil. Before what? What's the very end of that passage say? I'm sorry? Before I say that, I have no pleasure in them. See, if we don't teach our children when they're very young, when they get older, they don't care. There's no pleasure in that. There's no interest in it. I don't see the point. I don't understand why. And from some teenagers, even if you teach them young, you're still going to get those responses. You're still going to get those responses. But at least, and we're going to talk about this later, at least you've done what you can. At least you've done what you can. I looked up some research because I was kind of interested. I've caught on to some research lately on new studies in brain development that we have that's newer from when I was in college. See, when I was in college, the best way we had to take a picture of your brain was an X-ray in that part of your head. Well, you can't do that over and over and over and over as they get older. That doesn't work too well. But now we have these cool things called MRIs. We can get all kinds of cool pictures, and we can measure things within the brain. And there's a couple of things that I found in my research. You know what one of the last parts of your brain to develop is? As you grow, this part right here in the front. And guess what part of that, it's not the only thing, but guess what that part of your brain helps monitor and control and regulate? Decision making, forward thinking. It helps you plan and see consequences and rewards down the road. Okay, parents, you're going to get this one. Guess when that is fully functional on the average? 25. That's why you have an 18, 19, 20-year-old boy, right, that gets in his car and he peels out at the stop signs and he hits the brakes at the last minute and he speeds trying not to get caught and he swerves around the corners. And then he gets to be about 25, 26 years old and he looks back and he goes, man, I was pretty dumb. What was I thinking? Because now he sees the consequences. Now he understands the forward part of it. I also found this. The newborn brain weighs about 400 grams. Okay? 400 grams. By 1 year of age, the brain weighs 1,000 grams. So it's just more than 2.5 times as big. what's happening in that first year of life? They're learning. That's the result of the neurons attaching themselves and making connections and new neurons growing, and it's a brain explosion right there. By 2 years of age, the brain is 80% of how big it's going to be when they're an adult. 2 years of age. And when they measure the neurons, I saw these cool little pictures of, you know, a few neurons, a lot of neurons, packed with neurons. 0 to 2. What happens if we wait till they're 5, 6, 7 years old to start teaching them? We've missed. We've lost 80% of their brain. We've missed out. That doesn't mean we can't catch up, but we got a lot of work to do now. So what do? When they're little bitty, they can't talk to you. You can't answer them a question. You can't ask them to read a passage in the Bible. But what are some things you can do with a 0 to 2 year old child?
Tell them stories.
Tell them stories. My kids, when they were real young like that, they loved to have me tell them stories and read them stories. What else? Sing. Now, see, here's a pet peeve of mine. I'm going off on a tangent. You ready? When you sing, it's one of the only activities that the average human being can do that uses almost every part of the brain. Did you know that? When you're sitting there reading, part of your brain is engaged. When you're sitting there watching TV, less of your brain is engaged. And that's a scientific fact. I'm not just making that up. But when you sing, when they put people on monitors and they have them reading a piece of music and singing, or even just singing out of their own head, the needles just start going nuts. Huh. Is it any wonder that throughout history, when God has had people worshiping Him, singing and music was included? Because there's emotional attachment, there's intellectual attachment, there's physical attachment to what you're doing. How did most of us learn our ABCs? We sang the song. And some of us still, if we're trying to do alphabetical order, we have to sing it real quick and get as far as we're going. Because we remember that. We remember that. So when they're young like that, teach them songs that are passages of Scripture, are things they need to know, random things, the names of the apostles, the names of the books of the Bible, things they're going to need to understand later, the basics, so that they can put it all together later. Because they're going to remember that. They're going to remember those songs. And they're going to remember those stories. And they're going to remember that interaction that you have with them. By 18 years of age, the brain is as big as it's ever going to get, learning-wise. What does that tell us? We better get them by 18, or it's going to be really hard. That time, all the way up to 18 years of age. Oh, that's interesting. How old is it when most kids leave home? They're about 18, 19, somewhere in there. Now mom and dad don't have as much influence on them anymore, do they? They better have wielded their influence by now. It's so important. It makes sense to me. It makes sense. We talked a little bit about Psalm 78, but I want to go back there again. Because I want to remind you of it. If you're a parent, especially a parent of young children, or you're a grandparent with young grandchildren, I feel like this is an extremely important passage for you to mark, for you to know. Highlight this. Type it out on a sheet of paper and put it up in your house someplace Do something so you remember this. Because this is a reminder of why you're doing what you're doing when it seems like you're not accomplishing anything. When it seems like you're spinning your wheels. When you're tired. When you're frustrated. This is a passage to go to and understand. Those first few verses. Give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the word of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known and our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from our children, telling them to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and His strength and His wonderful works that He has done. For He has established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which He commanded our fathers that they should make them known to their children, that the generation to come might know them, the children who would be born, that they may arise and declare them to their children, that they may set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep His commandments, and may not be like their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that did not set its heart straight, and whose spirit was not faithful to God. Remember, I talked to you about, to me, this passage is the spiritual equivalent of, I want my children to have it better than I did. I want them to understand it better. As parents, it should be our goal when we're teaching our children that they exceed beyond us. Someday, I want my children to know more and understand more about the Scriptures than I do. That's my goal as a parent. Will it happen? I don't know. But I'll guarantee you one way for it not to happen. Don't teach them anything. Don't do it. Whenever I'm talking to parents or talking to individuals about the idea of teaching, period, doesn't matter, their children, other people's children, doesn't make any difference. Somebody, almost always, not every time, but a lot of times, this comes up. What if they reject the information I'm trying to teach them? Okay. I can't help but think of one of my favorite philosophers on parenting and child rearing, Bill Cosby. When he was talking to his son, I don't know whether this is true, but it's funny and it's interesting to me because it's a concept we do. He's talking to his son who was failing a class. He said, "Son, why are you not trying?" And his son looked at him and said, "Because if I fail, I haven't even tried yet. Imagine what I'll do when I try." Well, okay, so maybe you teach somebody, you try to teach your children something, and they don't catch it. Okay, at least you tried. That information is in there somewhere. What does God say about His Word? It will not return to Him void, empty. If it's in there, it's in there. And they may need it someday. They may use it sometime in the future. You have no idea. You have no idea when that's going to come into play. I find it interesting how many times my children come home and they've been talking to some of their friends at school about something to do with the Bible or something to do with religion. And it amazes them how little some of their friends know, even though they say they are religious. It's amazing. Well, he's not here, so I'll embarrass him anyway. Aiden was invited one evening to go to a Bible study that some of his friends were having. Okay, and there was going to be an adult there to lead it. And Jill and I decided that he knew enough to be able to go to this study and either ask us or verify for himself what was true and what was not. So when he got home, what did Dad do? I quizzed him. What'd you talk about? What'd you learn? And there was two things he remembered from that time with those kids. One of the things he remembered is that the gentleman that was leading the study was completely amazed at how fast Aiden could find stuff in the Bible. Because the other kids were just hunting and couldn't find it. Now, that doesn't mean Aiden's anything special. I don't think he's any better than most of the kids that you raise. But what have we done since they were this tall? He knows the books of the Bible. He knows the song. He can say it. He knows it so he can find things. He's had to open this up and find things before in classes and in settings. So he's accustomed to it. He's not afraid of this. It doesn't bother him. The other thing that set an impression on him, he said, I was surprised that he talked for 45 minutes before he ever brought up a scripture. Now, why did that stick in his head? Why did he notice that and none of the other kids did? Because he's used to going to a class or a study time, and the first thing we do is we get this out and open it up and start looking and reading and trying to figure it out. That's what he's used to. So anything off that was unusual to him, caught him by surprise. So what if they reject the information you have for them? Really, is that the answer you have for not teaching? It's a pretty lame excuse in my book. It's pretty bad. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 4 in the qualifications for an elder and verse 12 in the qualifications for a deacon, what does it say about the leadership in the church? What are they supposed to be able to do? Teach their children. They're supposed to be able to teach, but they're supposed to have their children, depending on your version, under their control. That's what the point is. That's what the point is. It doesn't mean they have perfect families, but it means that their children, they're doing everything in their power to help their children become good Christians, good followers of God. At some point, the child is going to bear their own responsibility to God, aren't they? Don't we know families that have the same parents, have been taught the same things, have been taught pretty much the same way, and some of the children stick with the church and with God and are faithful and some aren't? Isn't that true? Can we really look at the family and go, wow, the parents dropped the ball on that one? I don't know that we can. I don't know that we can say that from the outside looking in, even if none of the children are faithful. Because how do I know what that parent was trying to do and how they were doing it and how much the child just refused? One of the other questions that was there was another one that got me thinking. What if the parent does not have the skill or interest? Now, that's one question, but to me, it's two completely different sets of circumstances. So we're going to handle them differently. Let's talk about the skill. What if a parent doesn't feel like they have the skill to teach their children? Well, get it. Be determined. Don't just throw up your hands and go, well, guess that's it for my kids. That's not what God wants us to do. Okay, so maybe you are not quite as good of a teacher as brother or sister so-and-so. Who cares? We talked about that last week. Do it anyway. Do it anyway. Teach them something. Did you know what you needed to do to be a Christian? If you knew how to do it, you know how to say it. Do you remember all those stories about Moses? You know, guess what? If you can read, you can open up and read. Oh, here's an idea. Learn together. Learn together. And here's another idea. When I was in training in my education classes to become a band director, I had to take a one semester class on woodwinds. Okay? I had to spend one semester learning how to play the flute, the clarinet, the saxophone. Now, Do you suppose I walked out of that classroom very proficient on any of those instruments? Not really. I knew how they were supposed to work. I knew what the fingering chart looked like, and I tried to make some sounds on them, but I couldn't sit down and play with a group. That wasn't happening. Okay? I get out of college. That's the only exposure I had to knowing how to play those instruments. I got out, got my first teaching job. 4 weeks into my first teaching job, I think things are going great. And I have this little fifth grade clarinet player come up and say, "Mr. Twaddell, I don't know how to get from this note to that note." I'm looking at her fingers. I don't even know what note she's talking about. And I said, "Well, I'll tell you what. You come in next week after school, this day next week, and we'll work on it." And guess what Mr. Twaddell did for a week? I learned how to play the clarinet. At least those two notes. And I could get back and forth from one to the other without squeaking, squawking, or stopping. Oh, she thought I was great. I didn't have the heart to tell her I didn't know what I was doing. But that little girl taught me how to play clarinet. Because guess what happens when you try to teach somebody something? You learn it better than they do. You learn it. Because you want to be able to impart that information, so now you know it really well. So if you don't think you have the skill to teach, guess what you need to do? Teach. And who better to start with than a young child that only needs the very basics? Needs to know the stories. Needs to know about how God made the world. Needs to know about how God took a man by the name of Moses and led people out of slavery. Needs to know the story about a man that came down and died for them. Because we make mistakes. What a better time for you to learn. The other thing is, don't be so focused on what I call, quote unquote, sit-down studies. You know what I'm talking about? If you're going to teach your children, maybe as they get older, this becomes more relevant. But especially when they're young, you don't have to sit down and have a 45-minute study with them. But you can take every little possible teaching moment and teach them a little bit at a time. Teach them this. Teach them that. Take a story you know from the Bible and see how it relates to modern day life. You are going through the grocery line and you see a little canister there that's collecting change for some little girl that's got cancer or some family that's had a tragedy, right? They're there all the time. At least in my hometown, they pop up once in a while. I don't know about the big city, but I'm assuming it's similar. And as you walk by with your young son or daughter, you drop a few coins in there. Guess what you now have the opportunity to do? Oh, you could teach them about giving, about helping others. You could talk about the story the Good Samaritan. Thank you. I saw a shiny thing and my brain didn't catch back up with me. If you were here last week, you know what I'm talking about. You've got all kinds of opportunities right there. Right there. And that's just one example. Every minute of every day, there is a chance to teach. There's a chance to learn. If you can't do anything else, teach them to be thankful. Teach them to be thankful. You know, that's one of the things that God said happened to the Gentiles. Remember? He said they refused to be thankful. They forgot where all the good things that happened to them came from. Well, we can't forget, or we're no better than they are. So we have to remember. Answer their questions. If you don't know the answer to their question, now guess what you get to do? You get to learn. And you get to look your child in the eyes and say, "Guess what? Daddy doesn't know. Daddy doesn't know. But how about we sit down and we try to find out? Now, by doing that, what are some lessons you've just taught that child? You've got to learn how to use your Bible so you can find the answers to questions you don't know the answer to. What else have you taught them? Yeah, I'm not perfect. I don't know everything. And it's okay not to know everything. If I don't know it, that's when I have to find it. You can also teach them how to study. Because now you're just not spewing information into their ears. Now you're showing them how you get that information. That may be better than sitting down and just telling them a story. Amazing. Sometimes we have to understand as parents there are distractions. Remember a guy by the name of Timothy? And Paul was impressed about the faith of Timothy. Why? What did he comment about it? Where'd he get it? Yeah, from his mother, who got it from her grandmother. Okay? But what do we know about Timothy's father? He was a Greek. Probably a Gentile. You suppose there were some distractions when mom was trying to teach her son about God and trusting him? Oh, I imagine. There were probably some distractions, but she did it. What about Moses? You think there were some distractions when Moses' mother was bringing him up in the house of Pharaoh as his nursemaid to her trying to impart to him the knowledge of his people and their God? You think there were some distractions? I'm sure of it. I'm sure of it. So who cares if there's distractions? That just means you got to work a little harder. Do we have distractions in our society today that draw our kids' attention away from God? Oh, if you think they don't, you haven't been paying attention. Okay, so that's what if the parent doesn't feel like they have the skill. Now let's address the other issue. What if the parent doesn't have the interest? Well, if you were a Christian and you got married and you started your family and you just don't have the interest in teaching your children, my question to you is, what were you thinking? What's going on in your head? Because that doesn't make any sense. Perhaps what you need to do is increase your faith first and do it quickly. If you are a father, be a man and fulfill the duty that God has placed on your shoulders to be the spiritual leader of your house. If you're a mother, rise up and fulfill the duties that God has placed on your shoulder in raising godly children. That's your job. That's your duty. Stop wishing you had a different mountain to climb and start praying for the strength to get up the one that's in front of you. Because that's what it's going to take. It's not a matter of whether you're interested or not. You just have to do it. I have some final thoughts. God instructs parents to be the spiritual leaders of our families. And unfortunately, even within the church, too many parents are refusing to take on that role. They're leaving it up to others, whether that be the church, whether that be grandma and grandpa, or whether that be just people they know, whoever. They're refusing to take on that role. There are lots of distractions that get in the way of us trying to teach our children. But it's up to us as parents to take control of as much input as we possibly can that goes into the minds of our children. Especially when that brain is expanding so quickly in their young years and again in their teenage years. It's so vitally important. This includes, but is not limited to, and I had to write down a list, there's so many. TV, movies, video games, books, friends, music, computers, computer games, computer internet, cell phones, activities, and then I put et cetera because I'm sure there's stuff I missed. If you're not, as a parent, if you're not monitoring what goes into your child's brain, you're already falling down on the job. Because if they hear you and the church teaching them, let's say, 8 hours a week, which is not nearly enough, 8 hours a week, what's in the Bible, and they're getting 16 hours a week of other stuff, who's going to win that tug of war? Why are we surprised? Why are we shocked? Why does it amaze us when we think we're trying to do our best to teach our children, but we let them watch whatever movie they want, we let them listen to whatever music they want, we let them read whatever books they want, we let them have whatever friends they want, we let them do pretty much whatever they want, and then we're just absolutely shocked and surprised when they aren't interested in what we have to teach them. To those that are not yet married, I'm going to be very blunt. I'm not always blunt, but you're going to get blunt, Doug, for a minute. If you don't want the responsibility of being a parent and are not willing to make the sacrifices and hard decisions that are necessary to raise up God-fearing and obedient children, please do not get married. You can't handle it. If you feel the need to get married, then please prepare yourself to be willing to make the sacrifices and hard decisions necessary to raise up God-fearing and obedient children. You have to. Here's why I think you have to. Let's turn to the book of Ecclesiastes. Ezekiel. See, we all make mistakes. Ezekiel chapter 33. Now I'm going to start reading in verse 1. Again, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, speak to the children of your people. And say to them, when I bring the sword upon a land, and the people in the land take a man from their territory and make him their watchman, when he sees the sword coming upon the land, if he blows the trumpet and warns the people, then whoever hears the sound of the trumpet and does not take warning, if the sword comes and takes him away, his blood will be on his own head. He heard the sound of the trumpet, but did not take warning. His blood will be upon himself. But he who takes warning will save his life. But if the watchman sees the sword coming and does not blow the trumpet, and the people are not warned, and the sword comes and takes any persons from among them, he is taken away in his iniquity, but his blood I will require at the watchman's hand. So you, son of man, I have made you a watchman for the house of Israel. Therefore you shall hear the word from my mouth and warn them for me. When I say to the wicked, O wicked man, you will surely die, and you do not speak to warn the wicked from his way, that wicked man will die in his iniquity, but his blood I will require at your hand. Nevertheless, if you warn the wicked to turn from his way, and he does not turn from his way, he will die in his iniquity, but you have delivered your soul. Now that has so many far-reaching concepts in my brain that I just don't have time to go into it. This is why we should be talking to our neighbors. This is why we should be talking to our coworkers. This is why we should be talking to our family. This is why we should be talking to our friends. This is why we should be teaching our children. God doesn't see it as an optional activity. It's important. It's necessary. And it's required. Because God has given us a warning. He has warned us that the sword of destruction is coming. Don't know when it's going to be, but he's promised that it will. At some time, the trumpet is going to sound and the end will be here. Maybe we'll be alive when that happens and maybe we won't. I have no way of knowing. If we are, we have to be ready. If we're not, we have to be ready sooner. And it's our job as parents to warn our children about that day and prepare them for it. Because if I warn my children, we brought this up earlier, if I warn my children about that day and they refuse to listen to the warning, their punishment will be swift and sure, but the blood will not be on me. God will look at me and say, I have done my part. But if I refuse, if I fail to warn my children, they'll still die in their iniquity. They will still suffer the same punishment. But now, God looks at me, and it's my fault. That's a burden I have to bear. The only way for me to release that burden from my shoulders is to do everything I can to teach my children. Not just on Sunday morning, not just on Wednesday night, not just on the car ride home, not just if we sit down and have an elongated sit-down study, but when I'm awake, when I'm asleep, when I'm walking, when I'm talking, every moment that I can possibly find to teach my children, it's my responsibility to do that. If I don't feel capable, I better find out what I need to do to become capable. If you have not given your life over to God, you have your warning. I've done all that I can. God has sent His Son down here to die for you. He took the sins of the world upon Himself and became sin so that you would not have to know the punishment of sin in the end of time. He can take that away from you through His blood. If you need His blood, if you need to repent, if you need to confess His name so He can confess your name before the Father, if you need to be washed in baptism of your sins so that you can walk and be holy and obedient in His sight, now is the time. You have been warned. Won't you come forward as we stand and as we sing?